You might not expect the winner of a MacArthur Fellowship and a Whiting Writers Award, who's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, to have written a zombie novel, but Colson Whitehead's latest book, Zone One, is just that. It takes place in a post-apocalyptic New York where a team of sweepers must eradicate the zombies created by a mysterious plague. It's published by Doubleday, and I'm very pleased that it brings Colson Whitehead back to our show today. Hello.
Howdy.
So should we be surprised? After all, your first novel, The Intuitionist, was in the what Margaret Atwood calls the speculative fiction genre.
No, yeah, sure. I mean, the stuff that made me want to be a writer was Stephen King, X-Men comics, a lot of science fiction. It seemed like a good job if you were a writer. You could make up crazy stuff about superheroes and vampires. So that's what made me want to enter this crazy line of business, and you know, I'm glad that six books in, I had the opportunity to pay homage to my childhood influences.
But at a certain point, people expected you to be serious because you'd become a respectable writer of serious fiction.
Well, I think the idea is to keep it in the vein of my other books, but keep it varied enough that people can see that zombies are just a rhetorical prop, a vehicle for talking about how people live, loss, memory. So in the same way I used elevator inspectors to talk about social progress and the transformation of the city, I'm using zombies to talk about the living parts of the dead and the dead parts of the living.
A couple of years ago, you wrote an essay for the New York Times Book Review called Picking a Genre, in which you said that when beginning a novel, you throw darts at a modified dart board to decide which genre to write in. Why do you like working, at least nominally, within genre fiction, and did you throw darts for this one?
Well, my last book was a coming-of-age novel, so it was very different.
Quite realistic.
Yes, and I think it addressed a certain part of my personality, the optimistic part. The main character in that book, no matter what happens to him, believes that things will turn out okay, and I feel that way sometimes. Zone One expresses a different part of my personality, which hates humanity, wishes that everyone's dead, and I wouldn't have to wait in line for the movies. So this, Zone One addresses my pessimistic side. It's a different genre, but it allows me to, by switching around, I'm allowed to address different parts of who I am.
But you're not the only writer who has seen how the conventions of detective fiction or horror fiction can serve larger concerns.
No, sure. I mean, take Beloved by Toni Morrison. That's a ghost story. Cormac McCarthy's The Road is Mad Max to me.
We have Margaret Atwood doing this sort of thing, Marcel Theroux. There's a whole bunch of writers who are doing right now.
Yeah, I think it makes sense if you write a bunch of books that you want to keep it interesting for yourself and your readers. I know that when I'm done with a book, I'm so sick of what I just finished. I can't believe I spent 2 years with these people. So I have to find a way to switch it up so I don't go crazy.
In this novel, are you using the conventions of the zombie novel as a jumping off point for what's really a satire on contemporary society?
I think that's in there. I think when I started, I wanted it to be completely depressing. And then some of my dark humor started creeping in, as it does. So I had to accommodate that. For me, it's really a book about loss and becoming a survivor. It's the end of the world. People are kind of bummed out. And whether you're recovering from a big disaster like a hurricane or a private disaster like a death in the family or losing your job, Mark Spitz, it's a nickname, the main character in the book, becomes a way of talking about survival and moving on from an accident, from the before world you've been exiled from to the after world.
Now, why give him the name Mark Spitz, the name of the great Olympic swimmer?
It's an ironic nickname. You know, he's a soldier, basically, and from what I know from movies, soldiers give each other nicknames like Four Eyes, Brooklyn, Shorty. So he's not much of an Olympian. He's very unexceptional. So they give him the nickname Mark Spitz after an incident, and there's sort of a long story behind it.
And he's never called Mark. He's always called Mark Spitz.
In the same way that Mark Spitz, there's some people in your lives, who have to have the first name and last name. They can't be Mark or Jim or Sue. So he's part of that tradition.
He is a part of a team of sweepers, civilian volunteers charged with clearing Zone 1, which is Manhattan south of Canal Street, of Skells and Stragglers. What are the Skells and Stragglers?
Skells are the zombies we know from pop culture, lumbering, slow-moving creatures. You know, I'm kind of old school, so my zombies are Romero style. And then
You must have seen Night of the Living Dead when you were a kid.
And it scarred me horribly. I've had a lot of zombie dreams since then, so I hope that in writing this book I would, you know, silence my lambs. And I think I did mostly. But then there are the stragglers, and they're like malfunctioning zombies, and they're basically like ghosts. Instead of wanting to eat people, they go to some emotionally charged place in their lives where they worked. If you're a radio host, you might go to your studio, put on your headphones, and wait for a message from the engineer, who's of course dead. And they sit in these places that they loved as statues to who they used to be. And so they become a way of talking about memory and exploring how the survivors who aren't infected are also kind of stragglers stuck in their past.
How do the sweepers go about getting rid of the zombies?
They go door to door. The military has swept out most of them. So they're doing the grunt work of going to restaurants, corporate towers, and just sweeping out, you know, the ones that are locked in supply closets and stuff like that, and getting out the dead bodies, the decomposing poodles. So it's dead folk and pets, and they're trying to resettle things, try to make it clean so that people can come back and move to the big city.
And after each sweep, the team goes back to Fort Wanton in Chinatown, where the military is headquartered to get their next assignment. So pretty much the whole city is a war zone.
Yeah, there's a wall across Canal Street, and everything above there is the untamed wilds.
That's where we are right now, by the way.
Yes, I know.
But barely.
It's unfortunate.
We used to be below Canal Street.
Yeah, so you would have been safe. I think, you know, in trying to figure out the location for the book, you can easily slip into a zombie land or a destroyed New York when you walk around downtown at night. Wall Street is completely empty after 9 p.m., and it is a depopulated, kind of ruined city.
Well, there were barricades put across Canal Street after 9/11, and Zone 1 includes Ground Zero. New Yorkers reading this book will remember the empty streets covered in ash. You were obviously trying to evoke that.
I think that there are different stages in, you know, New York's history that are being, you know, played out. I think that that year of, you know, downtown being taken over by Ground Zero, the ash in the air. Mark Spitz, the main character, has these hallucinations of these blizzards of ash as he walks through the city. It also recalls this New York in the 70s and 80s when we had an economic downturn and you can walk past rubble-filled lots. The sanitation folks are on strike, and that ruined city is still with me. I think we've suffered an economic downturn. The infrastructure hasn't suffered so far, but I do have the sense that we could always go back to that 70s, 80s, horrible New York.
Well, in those days, we saw a lot of people sleeping in cardboard boxes or along the streets. Now they're all sleeping in Zuccotti Park.
Certainly. I mean, I
which would have been swept first.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, we're always on the verge of going back to, Depression era New York, 70s New York. And so that impending disaster is hopefully, you know, contained in this book.
The survivors all suffer from post-apocalyptic stress disorder or PEST. Now, obviously, it's a play on PTSD, but it also gives you a chance to sound out a double entendre.
Yeah, they're quite upset and disturbed by the past. The symptoms are, sleeplessness, insomnia, nightmares, eating too much, eating too little. So basically all the survivors have a bad case of the Mondays. And, I'm trying to erase the division between the before and after.
My guest is Colson Whitehead. His latest book is a novel called Zone 1. It's published by Doubleday. Writers have speculated on various ways that the human race might be wiped out or partially wiped out, nuclear war, viruses, climate change, etc. You chose a plague that turns people into zombies. Were you tempted to use one of those other devices?
I think growing up, living in New York, the zombie apocalypse speaks to me. I mean, you fall into zombie land when you get in a rush hour, a full train of rush hour, if you go to Whole Foods at 5 p.m. It's easy to think, am I the only living person in this place? And so that fear of people speaks to me. I think I identify the zombie horror as the truth being revealed. You've tried to ignore the fact that at any moment your friends, your family, and neighbors can turn on you and eat you and devour you. So that's the zombie fear for me.
When you're writing about something like this, how detailed do you have to get? Do you work out how the plague began, where it came from before you began writing it?
Because, I mean, the general zombie trope is that it starts the first day or the first week or the first month. I wanted to skip ahead. And so the plague, the end of the world, is a fact, and people are rebuilding. And I wanted to start at that point, get into the psychology of people who believe the worst is behind them, and they believe that they can get back to who they were, reboot society. And for me, that became a very fertile ground.
And Zone 1, after it's cleared, it becomes a place where survivors can return to. They've been living in refugee camps?
In horrible Connecticut, in various places. So even when everyone, 95% of the population is dead.
Could have been the Hamptons.
could have been the Hamptons. Even when 95% of the world has been wiped out, New York will be prime real estate.
Well, I get the feeling that you're commenting on how quickly Lower Manhattan rebounded after 9/11. Do you think people will always want to live here, even if it has just been cleared of zombies?
I think even if it's just you and you're Will Smith in I Am Legend or Charlton Heston in Omega Man in downtown Los Angeles, there's something comforting about just not waiting for the line in the ATM and having the city to yourself for once.
Well, the government has moved to Buffalo, not to Albany. Why Buffalo?
I've never been to Buffalo. It seemed I had no associations with it. But it seemed that if I had to pick somewhere, Buffalo has a nice ring, and you can always go to Canada. It's close enough to the border.
The book is also about marketing. The government strategizes over rebranding survival, and the American Phoenix lines up corporate sponsors, even creates a theme song called Stop, Can You Hear the Eagle Roar? That must have been fun coming up with that stuff.
Well, sure. I mean, I was trying to think of like what my apocalypse is, and I think the horror is that even when everything is over, all the stuff you hate is going to come back pretty quickly. So marketing, sloganeering, jingles, Bob Seger-type uplifting anthems.
Although they can't urge people to go out and shop as we have been in the past because there aren't any functioning stores left.
No, but there are corporate sponsorships. So people have been looting Nike stores. So why not bring Nike on board in exchange for tax breaks once things get back going? So
this
that's
is,
in there.
And really, this is to some degree a way of discussing gentrification in New York, isn't it?
No, I mean, it's really the New York of today. I mean, I'm superimposing this apocalyptic lens, but it's about how we live in 2011 and 2012.
A listener asked, have you considered doing a sequel to Sag Harbor?
For the first time in my life, I've thought about revisiting the folks in Zone 1 and Sag Harbor. The voice, not so much Benji Cooper, the main character, but I really liked that first-person narrator, the way he could accommodate so many jokes. So definitely that voice I could see going back to again.
Well, the closest to a semi-autobiographical novel.
After Zone 1, yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're
both. I'm on this autobiographical streak now.
Well, since this novel was inspired by zombie films, are there any plans to make a film based on it?
Not so far. I mean, we'll see if I get a call. Usually my books have too many black people in them for Hollywood to come calling. So we'll see what happens with this one.
We can make them white, can't we?
It happens. It happens all the time.
Colson Whitehead's latest book is Zone 1. It's published by Doubleday. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It was a real pleasure.